All right, welcome to Pack Your Mics, the Top Chef podcast in the theaters of Rita Reed. As you can probably hear, I'm not Alex Falcone. Alex went to New Orleans to try and find Padma's shorts from last season, so he's not with us.
I mean, it's a surprise elimination, really, right? So that, like, no one expected Alex to go home.
No one expected Alex to go home. In fact, it just turned out that Chris had immunity. And so Alex, he cooked a good dish, but he had to go.
Well, yeah. Crazy.
Brutal.
He'll probably be back again.
Yeah, but he'll be back on Last Chance New Orleans.
Yeah, so things are all scrambled up this week. I am here solo in Brooklyn. And then we're going to say hi to Megan, who's in Portland.
Hello.
And in the Bay Area, we have Ez and Sarah and our delightful Caleb.
Hello.
And then a surprise guest. Oh, yes, of course. Hi, guys.
Hello.
He's coughing.
He's got coughs for some reason. Work it out, Caleb. Come on, we're on national
radio. It's a
radio.
Good way to surreptitiously enter. And then we also, phoning us from the Bay Area as well, is Chris this week.
Hello.
Hello. So
I'm in San Francisco.
Indeed.
Chris looking pretty cool with like a headset microphone. Is
oh yeah.
Drinking his
business douche casual is how I'm dressing today.
That's true. You just need a hat.
You do need a hat.
A hat and maybe a Bluetooth in my
Yeah, double Bluetooth.
Feels right. So let's go ahead and get into the show this week. This is season 12, episode 5. And the title of this episode was It's War, which was kind of accurate. I think we had some battling, both historical and present day. And we kicked off with a quickfire, which was a little on the complicated side. So we opened up on the kitchen, and basically the challenge was a like a high stakes quickfire. You got $10,000 from Reynolds Wrap, and everyone got to choose a person to battle against, and then whoever they chose got to choose what their challenging meal was going to be, and it all involved Reynolds products. So what did you guys think about the $10,000 high stakes quickfire situation?
I love the high stakes quickfire. But I thought that the Reynolds advertisement that Padma had to read was a little awkward. She's doing her best to read it to say it in a normal way, but it was like, Reynolds Wrap helps you. I don't remember what they said.
No, it felt a
Reynolds
lot like
Reynolds Wrap will
that.
Help you really cut down the time that you spend in the kitchen or something.
Yeah,
really
I think if I ever had like a product, I wanted to make sure there was like the awkwardness was like folded into it. It'd be like Fox awkward Tupperware because things don't fit right. And just like it just then like Padma would be like, this is an awkward copy point from Fox's awkward Tupperware.
They're exactly as we expected. You would be really fulfilling Tom's requirements for describing your product.
Yeah, you give us what we want. I was staring at Caleb for most of this episode, and so I was a little confused. How did they pick what chefs got to be the people who picked who to challenge? So, like, for instance, they started like, "Hey, Doug, who do you want to challenge?" And like, how did Doug get to pick?
Doug deserves it.
Yeah. Like, I feel like that flew by me as well, actually. I feel like they kind of went around the room.
Yeah, I think it was who stood the closest to Reynolds Wrap to begin with.
Yeah. Whoever said they'd use the most Reynolds Wrap in their time in the kitchen, really.
Whoever's closely related to
that's some genealogy.
And it happened to be half of the chefs.
What are the odds?
Absolutely.
I actually thought, I mean, I was staring at Caleb for a lot of it too, but even so, I thought it was kind of boring, you know, and we watched, you know, Chris and Ezra and I watched it together, and we made the observation that since they were all making different categories of food, each team of two made something completely
five different dishes.
It was just hard to care that much. It was too much going on, I think.
The whole, I would say it definitely felt to me like the structure across the whole show had a lot going on. There are just a lot of moving parts at every stage of the game.
Yeah. Well, they were really trying to stir the pot with these challenges. They were trying to turn people against each other.
So, Megan, do you
Doug
feel like
and
the...
Adam are, like, totally against each other now, and I mean, Aaron versus everyone.
Yeah,
Aaron versus everyone.
But I feel like Aaron versus really everyone has been an ongoing theme of the show.
Yeah, and May versus
Yeah,
Raymond,
man, that's maybe. Like a always a bridesmaid kind of thing. Or just like, just...
Yeah. Well, in Hugh's blog, he was saying that it seemed like May had the perception that they were going to trade wins, and Gregory was taking more of his share. Mm. And so she was mad at him.
That's such a that's such an interesting egalitarian reading of their ongoing squabble. But did you guys, so I guess, what did you guys think about the way, I mean, because to me, the way that they ended up all picking each other, or not picking each other, but the pairs that developed felt like we were kind of stratifying the chefs in terms of talent. Like, May and Gregory were left mm-hmm. over at the end because nobody else wanted to go up against them, and the perception was kind of like, they're the best ones, so we'll just let them fight each other.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Yeah. As far as we knew at that time, you didn't get anything for just winning your challenge. You only got something for beating everyone, in which case it doesn't matter who you're going up mm-hmm. against.
Yeah.
That's true. If you have the best dish in the room, you get $10,000.
Yeah, so it's like, great, I beat Aaron, but Gregory and May still have better dishes, so there's no way I'm winning this $10,000. Like,
but you still want to choose someone you know you can beat, because if you lose, then you're not up for the $10,000 at all.
That's true. But, I mean, but either...
But the best dish in the room is going to beat whoever.
So it's,
either way, you have to beat everyone in the room.
Eventually you're going to
win. Keep a little bit of your dignity.
Yeah, you want to make yourself feel like a big man.
Well, and then this leads us into, so Gregory ends up winning the room, which he has done several times before.
That room is his.
And then that actually ends up playing into, what?
Oh, I just said that room is his. That's a his room.
That room is, it's a room that Gregory owns now. And so that actually ends up playing into the elimination challenge, so we take all the people that won the quick fires against each other. And those become the blue team. And then everybody who lost their half of the quickfire become the red team. And so it's an interesting... And then that breaks out into five more battles. explaining this makes me realize how hackneyed this really was. Like, I paused it a lot and, like, took copious notes to try and understand, like, what was happening at every stage.
And they did something like this last year where they had the winners do... The winners of a group challenge or like of battles are in one camp versus the losers in the other. And usually the winners are the people who are like riding high and think they're great. And the losers like are the ones who have to like, we got to work together if we're going to beat those winners.
Yeah.
Usually it seems like the winners or the losers beat the winners in the big elimination.
So, I mean, I think if it had been like a team thing, basically, where it's like, like, hey, all these losers, you guys get together, and now you're like Bad News Bears, and now you have to like work together for Restaurant Wars or whatever. That would have been sling. But it's now all you losers, you're now on your own again.
You're in a slightly grouped individual challenge.
So that was kind of the twist, Chris. I agree. They've definitely done this before, but then they stratified it again. So then the group of losers, you get to choose the order in which you are battling the winners, but you're doing duels again. So each of the, each of the teams got to decide, okay, Katsuji, you're going to go up against whoever. Like, they had to decide who do they think is going to be the most likely to win each of the individual challenges. So that was kind of the only team aspect. Those were each of the battles. So, and then the battles were Civil War themed. No, I'm sorry.
Revolutionary. It was a war themed. Who could know what war it was?
Hill.
No one will know which war that was.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Just it was a war theme. We will never know what war it was. I you know.
It sort of was a civil war, right? At the time, we just don't think of it that way anymore.
Fair enough.
That's deep, man. Megan's deep.
Yeah, so I have a question for you guys. How are you feeling about the way that we've been interacting with Boston so far? I feel like a lot of it is really history-based, and maybe Houghton Mifflin is, like, secretly sponsoring this entire season of Top Chef. What do you guys think?
Or DK Books with a big picture.
Oh, man, wait, could this all just be, we get, like, on Miss Frizzle's Magic School Bus and just take us around Boston or something?
Arnold.
I would love that.
I would agree with that, Tanya, that so much of what people, what we've seen in Boston so far has been Revolutionary War sort of focused. And it's true. Boston was one of the key, you know, centers of industry and population at that time. But yeah, I'd love to see more about Boston's character now. I mean, how about them apples?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you guys think?
Well, we got Boston. We got Cheers. We got baseball stuff.
That's true.
We got first responders to the Boston Marathon. I would like Boston of the future.
You want Boston, Jesse?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I think it's coming together. But I think that they're doing a better job than I originally thought they were. I think it's just hard because we're comparing it to New Orleans again, where it's like it's a much more unified spirit, it seems, behind New Orleans. And, yeah, you know, Boston has rich history and rich culture, but maybe it just – it's a little more – like disparate? I don't know.
Yeah, right. Like I think really the brand messaging for New Orleans is super on point. You know, it's like you got your beignets, you got Emerald, you got some beads, you got Mardi Gras. And there's that crazy guy with the hip tang. And like that's all like right in there in the same spot.
It all fits together.
Yeah, yeah. But Boston's like...
Yeah, like a gumbo. You might say.
Yeah. Who knows Boston, man? There's like all these different things. Yeah, yeah. It's like, yeah, Boston in the past. And then there's like people who drank in like the 70s and 80s, I guess, on this TV show. And then... you know, my futuristic beans.
Beans.
So maybe our vision of Boston isn't as cohesive. Yeah. What do you think, Megan?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess if Boston is using this as sort of a tourist advertising opportunity, the history is definitely something to remind people of. Like, there's a lot of cool things you can do in Boston if you're interested in history. But it really doesn't seem like There's a lot of contemporary Boston.
I would like a challenge that's just like, hey guys, something just happened right now in Boston at that corner. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, or even just bombing more contemporary. Definitely was part of that, but at the same time,
I guess,
there's not a lot of like modern Boston. I mean, next week we're getting cranberries.
That's true. That's true. I guess what I also wonder about is like more contemporary Boston cuisine. Just more food focus overall. So if we kind of break down the battles that we saw, they're all we had Adam versus Doug, Katsuji versus Melissa, Gregory versus May, Carrie Ann versus Stacy, Aaron versus Katie, and it all felt about as hectic as that sounds. Like it just was. There was a lot of people going head to head and very quickly getting through the food, and then you know people being named winners. And then, like, moving it on along. So that was, it was a tight episode in a lot of ways. There were a lot of, like, teams within teams within teams.
Now,
within
were
teams.
There any food restrictions, or was it just be cheap?
Yeah, so their food restriction, and this was a place that was, that I also, like, I actually wrote out the quotes that people were saying because I thought it was kind of bizarre. So our guest judge for the Quickfire and also for the Elimination Challenge was Jamie Bisonette. Who's a Boston restaurateur and also a winner of like a Northeast James Beard Award. And his little like plug that he had to put in there was, in times of war, food was scarce. So you'll only have $1,000 to shop at Whole Foods.
I wish they had done it, like really got into it. And it's like, so during the revolution, you'll have $2 total because there was some inflation passed after that.
Yeah, I know. I was like, well... Oh, go ahead, Sarah. Did you have something to say?
No, that wasn't me. But I actually totally Megan? Missed that money thing. I was just like, oh, they're making war food. Like when Gregory was making, I think he was the one who made the beef tartare.
Yeah, someone made something.
Not Greg. That was Doug. Sorry.
Yeah.
When Doug made beef tartare, he was like, well, I don't even know what he rationalized it somehow. Like it's war food. And Aaron made the comment, too, that, like, there's no cake during war. So I just thought the challenge was make war food. And I was like, that's weird.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and Adam also made, like, a soldier's breakfast, which was, like, he was one of the first ones up. And, and he kind of played around with that. But, Megan, you had something to chime in with.
Oh, well, I don't think so. But...
Actually, I like this. If everyone is like,
sorry, I swear I heard somebody, like, start to speak. And I was like, it must have been Sarah. And Sarah was like, absolutely not.
It might have been me.
Oh, Chris and his well-known lady voice.
Yep, in my well-known lady voice. And all I was going to say is that, like, sometimes it was war food, but most of the time it was just make whatever you want and the team has to share a budget. And, like, so, you know, there was that. There's no cake.
Oh, yeah, can we talk about Aaron now?
Thing, but Aaron was just being a jerk because there's also not Dashi during war.
Definitely not. Well, instant Dashi maybe during war. don't know.
Oh, yeah, he should have totally said that. Like, well, like, use the instant dashi.
Or scallop noodles. I'm sorry, he made scallop noodles, which is also weird.
Which is also, there's no war scallops either. It's not top war scallops.
Man.
Or top scallop noodle,
for
that matter.
We spend 3 minutes in that world for a second. What does top war scallop look like?
Well, it's where you're riding a giant war scallop, similar to what Hannibal did.
Across a blazing frying pan.
It's funny, you can sear on your war scallop.
And you don't want it to get overcooked and stringy.
Yeah, I kind of
think that's. I think that's the whole thing.
Is it kind of like American Gladiators, except but with like the war scallops as like the main competitors?
So you have your own scallop.
Or are there just scallops on the ends of sticks, and you hit people with a scallop stick?
I don't know if we're actually ever going to puzzle this out. Something that I did want to bring up for you guys is, for being a budget challenge, we actually don't see anyone at the register at Whole Foods. There's no like, ooh, gotta go put this back. It's too much money.
That's what I want. It's like the oh hey, can you buy my bottle of sherry because I can't afford it? Like that's what you want in that budget challenge. Didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and we've seen in previous seasons, we've seen people have issues at the register where they're over budget. And so I just figured, there's this big emphasis on like, oh, wartime, only $1,000 to feed 100 guests. We didn't ever get any more of that. And people kind of alluded to like a few people did vegetarian food to try and cut back on like the cost of meat. But it didn't show up in the way that I expected it to.
Well, I think some of them... I think Melissa sort of mentioned at the end doing vegetarian food because she was trying to stay within budget. But I felt like there were other people who at the grocery store said like, oh, I would have gotten the skirt steak, but I didn't. And then they never reminded us of that again later. And so it didn't really tie into whether they won or lost.
Fun fact, guys, in most times of war, like in older times, meat was actually not that scarce because you have to like build a ton of armor and stuff like that from leather, so they just like kill all the cows. So if you're going to war, you get meat.
You don't get
historical slam from like Ezra.
Roman times. Yeah, wow.
Good to know.
If you want some meat situation, go to war.
So how did we feel? Let's get into the elimination and what ended up happening. So we had the team that played together, stayed together. Gregory kind of rallied the blue team, and they ended up riding to victory on the wings of love. And then we had the red team, which was kind of everyone for themselves, and that didn't stay as good, and that ended up bringing them down. What did you guys think?
Well, I thought one thing I thought was really interesting is that it seemed like the judges were looking to Adam as the decider on whether that team was going to play together or play separately. And I just I don't know why they put him in that role. I thought it was really weird.
He's pretty tall.
Because he's the loudest. He's the loudest on the red team. And so he was the one who was talking the most at judges' table.
Yeah, Chris, you're right.
I thought maybe it was because he was wearing an American flag on his head. I don't know. It felt really strange. Maybe it just had to do with how much he was talking at judges' table, but they also mentioned it at the end, I think, of the challenge when they were still cooking. Like, when Aaron's dish didn't go well, they mentioned that, well, Adam is sort of playing the game here. He's not... treating them as a team. And I thought it was really weird that they just decided that he was...
And there could have been some weird stuff edited out by the magical elves, but true. Adam definitely was speaking like he was the team leader, and he was, tasting things and, doing that sort of thing, and similar to what Gregory was doing over on the blue team.
I do like the idea of appointing yourself team leader just so you can make sure everyone fails separately. It's like, all right, guys, we're a team. So keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
You guys, I'm here to silo this. Really, and keep everybody.
I'm here to make sure everyone stays exactly in their lane.
Yeah. Well, and then even within that, I thought that it was interesting that Gregory spoke up during the judges' table.
He did this thing, you guys. This was so weird, where his team won, so they're over on the side while the losing team is being talked to. And then Padma asks, hey, did anybody taste each other's dishes? And Gregory just pipes up out of nowhere and says, speaking as a winner who just won $10,000 today, I would never, ever let that happen without tasting and advising on every really single person.
It felt like...
I would totally step in.
It felt like an Olympian who then goes like motivational speaker, like, as a 2-time Olympian, I just gotta say.
Yeah, it was kind of a dick move.
Well, right, but it's not. They're not asking him. They're not
That's
even.
True.
He was.
They're
not
like
in
asking the class. Like, yeah, they're asking the losers a question, and the winner just pipes up and goes, "Yeah, you can," and then steps away.
Well, and very vaguely, in Gregory's defense, he really did just say he just like jumped in and was like, "That's not how I would have done it." He did not say, "Well, as a winner of many."
The subtext was there, Tanya.
Yeah, I guess I felt like it ended up being far more about like teamsmanship. Like I feel like people were talking about like, does this make Gregory more of a jerk, and are we turning on Gregory? And I expected him to be way more of a jerk when he jumped in. Did anyone else? Was anyone like? I guess you guys. It sounds like you really read that as him being very aggressive.
Me, he didn't sound aggressive. It was just the fact that he did it was so bizarre that the only way you could read into it, at least from the edit, was that it was aggressive.
Yeah, maybe we just cut out the line. It was like, hey, Gregory.
Yeah.
Would you like to share your opinions on that? And it was like, well, all right. Yeah. I guess if you make me.
That would have changed everything.
Oh, that would have changed everything.
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, Padma did say, like, oh, Gregory, are you raising your hand?
No.
Yes, Gregory, you in the back.
You in the back.
The lanky guy.
Yeah, yeah. So I feel like he tried to enter somewhat respectfully. I guess it was built up in my mind as it was going to be Gregory, like, sprouts some horns and, you know, gets out his pitchfork. And instead it was actually... a much gentler comment.
That's
than I
fair. I mean, I guess I would have a tough time kind of like gloating too much when really the whole thing would have gone very differently if Red Team had some strategy. So they put Aaron against Gregory and let May go against some schlub.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, like May, here's the thing about that. I'd love to talk more about the gamesmanship. May was feeling, I think, really emotional having lost a dumpling battle against Gregory.
I feel terrible every time
she
I lose a dumpling battle,
again.
For the record.
Yeah, yeah. And so she was like, no, let me at him. But at the same time, if they had done any sort of staggered strategy where they take May and put her against, like, you know, blue team's second best person, she would have wiped the floor with them. And even though Gregory's beat May in the elimination challenge unanimously, Hugh said in the blog that it was the closest two dishes together in the population, that it really was just that everyone agreed Gregory's was a hair better.
Hmm.
But even May's headband game being tight and right, it's really difficult to beat Gregory when he's having a good day.
Yeah. But he's not dropping his food on the floor.
that's the only thing. The only thing that can stop him is gravity.
He's a well-balanced gentleman. It's true.
Are you guys getting bored of Gregory winning? Is he going to be another Hung where we just don't think about him much because he won everything?
I mean,
yeah, maybe let's segue into predictions and then we'll jump into the mailbag because we have some good stuff.
Oh, wait. So who lost? Who was eliminated?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, of course, we have to talk about Aaron and his hat and going away, which in tribute to Alex, he basically requested that Aaron be scrubbed from the rest of the Top Chef episodes that we have to watch.
There we go.
And that's exactly what happened.
And thank goodness. I mean, not only are we relieved generally, but it was totally his time to go. He made the worst thing ever.
And yeah, he tried out the same seafood, like, noodly thing. Like, it wasn't good the first time.
Yeah, how do we feel about recycling dishes on the show?
I mean,
boring.
Yeah, they'd have to be fantastic both times.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't feel like he was innovating so much as he was just sure that this beat Katie the first time and it would again.
It's. I can see why I'd think that, but...
Yeah, but Katie... No. Yeah, Katie made the most boring thing in the world. She made, like... chocolate cake with not a lot special to it, but because Aaron failed so miserably, it was very like easy to decide.
Is
that
the key here like you lose when you dump your food on the floor? That keeps happening. Like
it doesn't. It usually doesn't make things.
Oh yeah. Also, the dashi curse is back.
It's not a
wait
good
a second.
Sign.
Didn't Katie though ruin food at one point, and it ended up being fine?
Well, she thought she did.
Yeah, but not because
she didn't dump it on the floor.
Yeah, the
okay,
floor.
So that's the first rule of Top Chef.
Or, yeah.
But his,
I would say... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, his noodle and his meatball were also not good. So it wasn't the dashi.
We talked about this a while on our side of it with Chris. Just that it was dry balls versus boring cake. And boring cake's going to win over dry balls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Carrie Ann also suffered from
dry balls. Yeah, dry balls was like an epidemic, and dry balls is almost never going to win.
Hey, it was war. Maybe people get dry balls during war.
It's like in war, you also
dry balls during wartime. I feel like that's the opposite of what happens during wartime.
You think your balls are wetter?
Extra moist.
Extra moist.
I feel like, well, I guess it depends on the climate in which you're doing.
Yeah, it's really.
Yeah, you are going to wade into some swamps.
It's just a ball by ball situation. I don't really think you can like make generalizations about war. Just yeah.
Yeah.
It's hell on your balls, but it could be hell on your balls in different ways.
Well. Well, anyways, Aaron went home. It was glorious.
Yeah. So now that Aaron's gone, where how do we feel like our villain matrix is stacking up? Like what's happening there?
I mean, Katsuji's he's not really a villain, but he's annoying to people.
And people I think people generally like Katsuji and then are annoyed sometimes by him, but I think like the ratio is like in his favor on the whole, is what I got the sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a lot more chefs weighing in on Katsuji, including Adam, who said that he's 95. That the percentage was somebody else. Adam definitely weighed in and said that he's the most complex.
Yes,
person
I think it was Gregory who said he was 95% like really funny and 5% annoying,
hilarious and awesome.
Yeah. And 5% annoying. So who do we think? So I mean, Gregory's at the top. Are we nervous about him still being at the top? Do we feel like he's just gonna go on till the end of the show and then be beat by Nicholas?
I think May might snap and kill someone. I've seen some Salieri style like frustration in her in her failures. So I'm very concerned. Yeah.
I don't know if I'm seeing Salieri, but I could see maybe some like Marsha.
Yeah, she's
always the Jan.
Yeah, and then anyone else that we want to highlight at this time? Are there any other favorites that you guys are seeing emerge? I feel like Katie is holding steadier.
Katie's steadier. Adam seems to be doing
prediction
pretty well.
Is that and, Doug gets left at the house one day.
And then he has to fend off two burglars.
I was going to say, Doug is going to do a home alone. Little buddy.
he'll like ride his top war scout to victory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Melissa had a down week this week, but she has the pedigree where I think she can do well in a variety of challenges.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm still a Melissa fan.
Yeah. And then Carrie Ann versus Stacy is another one that I wanted to highlight because I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, Stacy's going to win that one every single time. Carrie Ann is having a tough go of it.
Yeah, do we feel like Carrie Ann is still on the annoying spectrum? Megan, it sounds like you wanted to chime in.
Well, I was just going to say that Carrie Ann is my prediction for who goes home next week.
Oh, so I'm almost positive it's not going to be next week, but maybe the week after that.
Okay, so Ez, who do you think is going to go home next week?
I'll still take popular whipping person, Katie. I don't know how you make like she's just her I guess approach to making stuff seems so different from what actually has worked that like I'm very concerned. It's like desserts and salads, and that can't sustain you.
I like that from a nutritional standpoint you're getting.
Well,
concerned.
Also on Top Chef, like like people go home for salads and desserts, like there's no issue. That's all she makes. Eventually it's gonna happen.
She also makes ribbon pasta.
That has happened.
Twice.
Okay. So yeah. Just these are all high-risk dishes. I don't know, man.
That's fair. That's fair. Sarah, did you give us a prediction on who you think is rising to the top and sinking to the bottom? Who's going to Drake and reverse Drake, as it were?
Well, I think Katsushi's probably... Katsushi.
Petsushi.
Petsushi is probably...
Good old Katsushi.
He's probably going to reverse Drake again, because that's his pattern. But I don't think he's going home yet. I also agree that it's going to be Carrie Ann or Stacey. No, we didn't say Stacey. I think Stacey's calling out. Yeah. I mean, she's kind of up and down, but I think she's going to reverse Drake at big time next week.
Yeah, she was the worst winner, I think, on this time.
Well, yeah, they said to her, you know, you beat a weak dish. That's why you won. And then they flashed to Carrie Ann, who looked so mortified.
I love them just like unnecessarily just also taking shots at Carrie Ann. Yeah. She's like, hey, Carrie Ann, yeah, you're on the winning side, but also you should feel bad.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, well, let's jump into the mailbag real quick, because we got some great people chiming in this week. If you want to share with us, you can go to packyourmics.com, or you can talk with us on facebook.com/packyourmics and leave us comments there. And so this week we heard from Joan, and that's actually the correct pronunciation. Chris had it right.
Oh, was it Joan or Joanne?
It's Joan, I believe.
Oh, okay. Hi, Joan. Boy, Joan.
Yeah, yeah. Or you can, he says you can also, you can call him John, because that's how English people say his name. So we're all right in the end.
Nice.
Yeah. And so he's wondering if Greg is going to be the most shining star from Top Chef history. And I didn't put together any kind of graph to compare everyone's performance, but he's been really, really strong so far. What do we think?
Here's why I say no from the get go, guys. Because I think the shining stars always have intense competition, like, all around them, right? Like, so I'm remembering, like, the Voltaggios, and who's, like, also had, like Kevin, and, like, there's just a lot of, like...
Kevin, my guy, Antonia.
Was that Jen?
Yeah, all those people. Jen. For the first half.
So, I mean, it's like, you need, people... I think, this, like, intense, like, boiler room of, like, you're rising to the top among the top. And, like, if no one else is really, like... trading blows back and forth, then it's going to be really tough, I think, for him to reach the sacred annals of Top Chef history.
Yeah, it's good to remember we're only at episode 5, and flameouts totally happen. I think that waiting a little bit longer is probably a good way to go on that.
Agreed.
Anything else on Gregory and his trajectory toward...
Well, so did you guys watch the preview for the next episode?
We just kind of, yeah.
You did?
With the cranberries and whatnot.
Yeah, definitely.
So
Tiffany Faison makes everybody get in waiters.
I never watch the previews because Alex doesn't like to, and I think this is the first time I've ever watched Top Chef without Alex. So I watched the previews just to see what they're like.
How delightful are the previews? Are you a fan? Is this the forbidden fruit of cranberries?
I was going to say, how are you feeling about your freedom?
I liked it. I think it's fun to look forward to next week. But they really scared me because it sounds like for the elimination challenge they're doing one of those like go cook out in the middle of nowhere with like not proper cooking tools. And Gregory said something about his goose, and it made me worried.
Undercooked.
Is it cooked or undercooked? I don't know. So I got a little worried for Gregory, like maybe he's going to get in trouble.
Megan and I also got worried. And then I also wondered if we were maybe just being fed exactly what we thought might happen because he's had such a good run. So maybe some of it is a trick of the editing to lead us astray. But I guess we won't know until Carrie Ann kicks off the next episode and tells us how much she is or isn't missing the kid.
Yeah, we'll see who drops what.
Yeah, exactly. We had a note from Steve Falcone, Alex's father, who has some information for us about Cheers.
Tell us, Papa Falcone.
And so he says, Papa Falcone! So he says, Cheers, like most sitcoms, was shot on a set in Hollywood. The exteriors were shot at the Bowl and Finch in Boston, but the interior was entirely different and made up. But now the Bull and Finch has been renamed Cheers, and that's the chefs arrived and saw the signs, and the like classic flight of stairs. And
that makes a lot more sense.
But the quickfire, and then apparently the quickfire takes place at a newer Cheers bar with different owners, and an interior duplicating the TV set. So he did some close watching, and we thank you very much for your
for schooling us at Cheers.
Yeah, on all things Cheers. That's awesome. I feel a lot more educated now.
How come, for Seattle, how come you guys didn't do anything about Frasier?
Oh, that would have been great if everyone had to make top salad and scrambled eggs.
Just don't know what to do with them.
Oh, that would have been so good.
Oh, man, missed opportunities.
Super missed.
They should just go back to Seattle and do that.
I really hope later in the season we get that Augustana song, right?
Oh, I think I'll go to Boston.
Yeah, exactly. Or like Dropkick Murphys or something, or Flogging Molly, like the shipping out to Boston. Just anything Boston themed.
Yeah, we've gotten some sort of like Boston Irish punk light. Like thrown in, but there's also been a lot of just like penny whistles and like drums. I feel like we're sticking to some revolutionary.
That's what they paved the roads with in Boston.
Drums
and penny whistles. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then Eunice chimed in on Facebook and wonders if Gregory speaking up this week might put a target on his back, which I think we kind of started to discuss. But I don't know if I think it's going to add to the cornucopia of animosity.
What do you guys think? It would just depend on how nice he is when we don't see him do anything, you know? Like, it could be just we get, like, the 5% of annoying. But, like, if he's just, like, generally a cool, tall guy most of the time, he'll be fine.
He's also kind of earned the, you know.
Yeah, if anyone's earned being, like,
earned
a little smug.
Being a little bit smug, yeah. They respect him.
Yeah.
I think he might be a little smug, but I don't
totally.
Know.
Totally. And we had some great comments on Twitter. At Chosen Chic, Danielle says A+ elimination on Top Chef last night. I think we all agree. A+. And then at Wants to Thrill says, I like the podcast and I'm not even sure we get Top Chef in Australia. I checked and I think you just have Master Chef.
You get a lot of cursed
stone. And then says,
right?
I just.
Or do we steal cursed stone?
I feel like that might be. Yeah, I think there's, well, when I looked up Top Chef Australia, Curtis Stone was one of the first things that popped up, of course, because he's always.
Then thank you for Curtis Stone.
Also maybe Janine Booth.
Yeah, and then just as I just love listening to you guys, watch, which is really sweet, and we thank you very much. And that's at Pack Your Mics on Twitter. So that's our mailbag, and we're coming to the end of our show. Are there any other overall thoughts you guys want to share on the episode? We're five deep. We've got, is it 10, 9 chefs now?
Nine.
We're down to 9? How are people feeling?
Hang in there, May. You only have to not lose in order to get to the finale.
Okay.
Do it.
Bold prediction, addition to getting left at home, Doug tries to stuff a turkey, gets lost inside.
Oh, no. Pocket pal.
Pocket pal.
I think Adam pulls him out, and they hug warmly.
Yeah. Oh.
That sounds really... I like the idea of it becoming like maybe like some kind of Homeward Bound thing where they all have to like get from Boston back to their hometowns on foot.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. I'm wondering if Dashi is cursed. I feel like between the ice Dashi last time and
floor
Dashi.
Someone should make a bold Dashi risotto.
Hmm. With scallops.
Ooh.
Yeah, just really tempt fate. And then one last thing that I just realized, there's some parallels. I want to see how often Richard Blaze shows up when immunity is around. Because so far those things have been going together a little bit.
Wow. Very interesting.
I hadn't noticed
Maybe
that.
Hugh is immunity. Yeah, you know, it's like a Superman thing.
Wait, no, Blaze would be immunity.
Yeah, no, because Blaze is there at the same time.
Oh, Blaze.
Oh.
Yeah. Maybe Blaze is actually $10,000 from Reynolds Wrap.
Hugh and immunity
yeah,
in
so
the same
Blaze
place.
Yeah, so Blaze is actually $10,000 from Reynolds Wrap.
Blaze is just money bills stuffed into a suit.
Tucked inside some delicious waxed paper.
Yeah. Well, I think that's all the time we have for today. Thanks, everybody, so much for listening. You can go to packyourmics.com and let us know your thoughts, as I mentioned before. And, of course, there's facebook.com/packyourmics. And if you want to support the show, you can shop through packyourmics.com/Amazon. And then we get some of the proceeds from your shopping.
Yeah, please buy Fox's awkward Tupperware.
Yeah, Ezra Fox's awkward Tupperware is going to be available in stores near someone.
Maybe.
Sure.
Someone you don't want to be around.
It's true. And actually, you know what, Chris?
Yeah?
You don't have immunity this week, so we're going to have to ask you to pack your mics and go.
Oh, well, it's been an honor, and I feel like I've had a really good run.
Awesome.
I miss you,
thank you guys so much for being here. Sarah and Ezra in the Bay.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Chris in San Francisco.
I'll see you on Last Chance Podcast.
Sounds good. See you in December. Megan in Portland.
Yay.
And Alex, we miss you. Come back so this seems organized.
Yeah, I recommend that too.
Yeah.
Good job, Tanya.
We'll talk to you next week.
Good job, Tanya.
Good job, Tanya.
All right, bye, everybody.
Bye.